This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. And this is a weekly feature wherein we answer your questions. So you can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com. I know for many of you, this is your favorite podcast because, well, you know, we have special topics that are of interest. But this is an opportunity for you to hear about, well, virtually anything. Anything comes down our pike that may or may not be relevant to you. We hope that you find these discussions interesting. I'm with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, who is a registered dietitian, and she's got a master's degree in the field of nutrition. So we're a dynamic duo capable of fielding your most cogent nutrition and health questions. All right, so how you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good, good. Right around this time, we want to wish our listeners a very happy New Year. Our listeners of the Jewish faith celebrating holidays or who've already celebrated holidays, that's this time of year. And we're well into fall. It's kind of a bracing time of year. Temperatures are changing, leaves are changing. And,
yeah.
You know, for a lot of people, it's an opportunity to get out there and just do it because temperatures are more congenial. A lot of people complaining about the heat this summer. No more excuses. You can get out there on the road. Just put on a sweater or windbreaker or a sweatshirt, and you're ready to go.
All right. Sweaters and boots weather.
Indeed.
One of my favorite seasons, yeah.
So in the news is a story that I find kind of interesting, which is in Science News at sciencedaily.com. Headline. Have more than 8 dental fillings? It could increase mercury levels in your blood. Gee, how
no
about
kidding.
That? All of
no
a sudden,
kidding.
All of a sudden, that's a concern because for so many years they were telling us it's okay, no
yeah.
problem, just move
Even
along,
the
folks.
The American Dental Association was yeah. saying it's okay,
no problem, yeah. folks. Just move along here, nothing to see. All right, here's what they say, and. You know, this is a debate that we've been waging for decades, you know, for as long as I've been in the field of natural medicine since the 1980s. They say that dental surface restoration is composed of dental amalgam, which is a mixture of mercury, silver, tin, and other metals. They significantly contribute to prolonged mercury levels in the body. Lo and behold.
Lo and behold.
I mean, that's what a surprise. I mean, if you insert mercury into your teeth, that some of it actually gets out and is in your body. Wow.
Oh, no problem, no problem, no problem.
Yeah. So, So they say mercury exposure from dental fillings is not a new concern, duh. But previous studies were inconsistent and limited. Finally, you know, after so many years of debate, they say, as toxicologists, we know the mercury is poison.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, not only in our amalgams, but there are other sources of mercury. And I'm going to mention seafood, yeah, as one, but it's also in high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, as a
residual. So put down that soda, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, as a residual of the processing. But so here's what they say. They say that the threshold is 8. If you don't have 8, then you're okay. The results show
like
that...
Like on a blood test?
No, 8 fillings.
Oh, the, 8 fillings, right, yes.
The results show that individuals with more than 8 fillings had about 150% more mercury in their blood than those with none. The average American has 3 dental fillings. 25% of the population has 11 or more fillings, so that means, just a quarter of people are super high risk. Right, 11 or more fillings. And, by the way, the study also looked at dental composite rosins, which is a mercury-free alternative for dental fillings, that unfortunately can release small amounts of BPA, bisphenol A. Yeah.
There's some plastic in there, in those composites.
So, look, it's preferable, but, I think we got to work on better and better, safer and safer alternatives. But, how about that, it just seems that way in medicine, is that drugs that have been on the market sometimes for decades, they recognize the downsides. So, for example, we see now tens of millions of Americans taking proton pump inhibitors, and we see a host of problems associated with them. We see individuals who are taking antidepressants, sometimes unnecessarily, and we see that studies show that they're virtually without a scientific basis, especially in children and adolescents, where they're frequently prescribed. Not that there's
higher rates of suicide.
And higher rates of suicide, which is demonstrable. Yeah. Demonstrable. And perhaps violence.
Because the stone cold killers that we see. The combo of murder suicides, there's some association to, anytime I read a story like that anymore, I say, were they on an SSRI?
Yeah. And it's hard to make that connection, because they're going to say, well, yes, they were, but, people with psychiatric disorders, sometimes, lose touch with reality and do bad things. So is it the drug or is it the underlying psychiatric disorder? Correlation isn't causation. But I think there really is an element of, desensitization that occurs sometimes with these medications, turning maybe depressed and anxious youngsters into stone cold killers, who can contemplate, very, very, gruesome violence, without a qualm because of this kind of numbing effect that these medications have. Well, this is another topic, but, what we're seeing here is, unfortunately, things that are advanced in medicine, fluoridation is another example, that only later come under scrutiny, and now
after the damage has been done.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Just thought I'd share. Okay.
We are human guinea pigs.
Yes.
It seems. Anyway. Well, I have a very interesting comment from Bart.
Okay.
An email. Bart writes, "Hello, Dr. Hoffman. Here's an odd question. And please indulge me, Dr. Hoffman. This is interesting. I'm a backpacker, and most backpackers carry hand sanitizers to use after doing their business in the woods. The thought is, if you sanitize your hands, then you won't get sick. Sounds reasonable.
Right.
But then there are also various tribes in the world that actually eat animal feces. Bedouins, the Inuit, without a problem.
Wow.
I work in acute care and have seen people with fecal emesis and not suffer ill effects. Some probiotic makers suggest to bite down on the probiotic capsule to populate your mouth with that bacteria, and now we have fecal transplant. My hunch is that fecal bacteria are also in our mouth, as it's hard to separate any part of the GI tract from mouth to anus. Now, I'm not going to stop washing my hands after using the bathroom, but I doubt backpackers will get diarrhea from their own poop. What are your thoughts, Dr. Hoffman?
Okay, this is a very thought-provoking, email. And
it's so well-written, I wanted to read it all to you.
It's interesting, and, this is an individual who does work in an acute care setting, and I'm very happy that it's a he, disclosed that he does, in spite of his musings on the subject, he does continue to wash his hands, which is probably good in a hospital setting. Actually, when I think of, people using these towelettes and, antibacterial products, I think more of the devastation to the environment, because we're now seeing high levels of triclosan in the environment. And what that means is that we're actually inhibiting bacterial growth in the soil and in the water, and we're actually disrupting the microbiome of nature, of our environment. And I recently wrote on this subject, And in one of our newsletter articles, you can find it at drhoffman.com. Yep. It's 8 reasons why I agree with the FDA's ban on triclosan, our antibacterial soaps. There's environmental devastation. There's also the cultivation of antibiotic antimicrobial resistant pathogens, which are becoming ever more prevalent and harder to treat. So there's a lot of considerations as to whether. Look, I mean, you can just in a forest environment, you can just use like regular alcohol swabs. That's not the biggest problem in the world for the environment. You want to clean your hands if there's no available water.
Which is definitely the main ingredient in hand sanitizer, isn't it? By the way, I've never used hand sanitizer.
Yeah,
nothing is going to compare to soap and water for me anyway.
And it works fine, you know, unless you really need to sterilize your hands. I mean, I would imagine that surgeons should be exempt from this rule because they need to really scrub. They don't want to introduce it's an unnatural setup where they're going literally, beneath the skin surface within the body, and they can transmit infection. So for those people, they do need to sanitize and use powerful disinfectants. Several issues here, about the tribal cultures that eat their poop or eat animal poop.
Or at least food that's contaminated with the poop anyway.
Which happens in the course of, improper hygiene or, under unclean circumstances. And, that's actually how, we may transfer harmful but also beneficial bacteria. We know that just the birth passage is an example of a non-sterile passage. It's a passage through the vaginal canal, which is populated with bacteria. There's no such thing as a sterile vagina. You can't douche it away or, antibiotic treat it away. It's going to harbor certain bacteria, hopefully beneficial bacteria, that are designed to be imparted to the baby to prime their immune system and to start their microbiome growing properly. And that's why C-section creates a different kind of microbial pattern in the gastrointestinal tracts.
And you know what? Tribal populations who live in the natural world, are probably going to have a much healthier microbiome.
Yeah, it's been documented.
Somebody using antibacterial anything.
It's been studied, in fact, what they find is the diversity is much higher in primitive tribes. In other words, they have a much more luxuriant flora and far higher number of and a diverse population of bacteria in their gastrointestinal tracts, which is associated with good health. Generally, diversity is a good thing. Just as in a forest, when an ecologist or an environmentalist studies a forest environment, an unhealthy forest environment is one that has maybe just a very few species of plants, narrow bandwidth in terms of the biology of that terrain, whereas in a luxuriant ecosystem that's pristine and unaltered by pollution or by human intervention, there's a very, very delicate interplay of many, many different species that live in harmony, and that's what should be happening in our guts. I think there's some interesting points raised by that. From a practical standpoint, let's not use antibacterial soaps. Let's use soap and water. We recently interviewed Dr. Maya Shetreat Klein, who wrote a book called The Dirt Cure, which is, all about that, about how, we don't need to be germ phobic, and kids need to play in the dirt and, touch things in nature and maybe be around animals and farm animals. It somewhat reduces the risk for allergies and autoimmune disease, in fact. So there we go.
When Bart says, "But I doubt backpackers will get diarrhea from their own poop," I don't know. It depends on the health of their own microbiome or what, or who knows.
Yeah. I actually think that, washing one's hands after going to the bathroom is a good idea.
Absolutely.
And perhaps more to the benefit of others than to yourself. Okay.
Yes.
Cause, you know, you may be introducing, you know, the pathogens that are in your body, you know, they're in your body already. So by simply reintroducing them, you know, you're not going to change a lot. But if you are carrying a pathogen and someone is vulnerable to that pathogen, that can be a problem. So I'm trying to have a serious conversation about something that sounds kind of weird and whimsical, but you know, those are some considerations there.
Yeah. So, yeah, Bart, thank you for your very thoughtful question.
Right. And what hospital are you working at, Bart, so I can avoid it, please? I'm just kidding. Yeah, okay.
Okay. We've got a very, very long email from Anne, but I've put it down into a nutshell.
Okay. And just for our listening audience, we prefer, you know, kind of succinct things.
Yeah.
And also, if, you know, some people think, okay, well, you know, I have a whole lot of problems, so I'm just going to send a list of my problems.
Yeah.
And we'll, you know, this is great because I can't really afford a medical consult and, you know, I don't have insurance, whatever. And I'm just going to ask the experts. No, this is not the forum for that. We would like a question that is somewhat, you know, laser-like focus, circumscribed, specific so that we can tackle it. You know, like, should I eat this, or is this a good supplement, or is there, I'm taking such and such, you know, for a condition, and do you have any other suggestions?
Yeah.
You know, we can do that.
So Anne writes, my mother is 97. She takes walks every day. She's not on any medication. She does take something for her macular degeneration, but a few years ago, she took a terrible fall and now has titanium plates in an arm and a leg. I was wondering, how can I help my mother be more comfortable and free of pain? And what do you think of this fish oil product called Omega XL?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's complicated. And certainly the older you get, the more vulnerable you are to arthritis. And, you know, just the general wear and tear that causes pain, stiffness, and immobility. So there's some inevitability to this. Show me somebody who's 97 who isn't a little bit stooped over and doesn't have some limitation. And I'll show you someone that's beyond the grave. So, with regard to this product, the product I think is a green lip muscle product. And it's now touted by Larry King. He's a spokesperson.
By Larry King.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's supposedly some kind of omega-3 super oil, and it's made from a patented blend of up to 30 different oils. So it's some kind of proprietary blend of something, but we don't know actually how much omega-3 is in there.
My experience with that is that green lip muscle was thought to be promising in the early 90s, and we used it to some extent. I didn't find that it was particularly more helpful than ordinary fish oil, and the studies that were done then, they haven't gone too much further with new studies. So that makes me think that it might be kind of a flash in the pan nutritionally, that they're, you know, it's unclear if these added oils augment the benefits of fish oil. Now, I'm not precluding the possibility that, you know, there's some benefit there. It's just that this has gone a little bit out of mainstream nutrition.
Yeah.
And notwithstanding the recommendation by Larry King, by the way, Larry King, virtually every product that I have endorsed in the past, I kickstarted the product, and then they came along and paid Larry King a lot of money to endorse the products. So I was an original spokesperson for Ester C.
Oh, no.
And then they said, hey, we got an even better spokesman. We got Larry King, you know, so what does he know about nutrition? But hey, he's very popular. So, Larry King has been the beneficiary of things that, and Ginsana also way back when, ginseng product, which
Ginsana.
Is a good, nice product. He also, voiced the commercials for them. So,
too bad.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. So what are some of the other things that an older person might use? Curcumin, I think regular fish oil,
yeah.
Or perhaps this fish oil, glucosamine with chondroitin, although sometimes, when you lose a lot of cartilage, it's beyond the scope of glucosamine chondroitin to help. Because it's bone on bone, and, you know, you can't take a pill by mouth and, you know, in a 97-year-old regenerate your cartilage that's already disappeared. So, you know.
Some MSM, some Boswellia.
Good. All those
helpful.
Are fine and safe,
And I think anybody with osteoarthritis, if that's what we're talking about, may benefit from the avoidance of nightshades.
Diet change can sometimes be helpful.
An anti-inflammatory diet, the removal of potential allergens, eating cleaner foods, the removal of light, the nightshades, which are tomatoes, white potatoes, peppers, eggplant, tobacco. I imagine Anne's mother is not a smoker at 97 and takes daily walks.
And drinks a pint of Johnny Walker Black every day. Because when you sometimes you hear these stories of these people.
That would be hard to walk.
You know, sometimes you hear these stories that, you know, people, if they, people who live a long time ascribe their longevity to all kinds of things. So there's some people who say, oh, I take a little, drink of schnapps every day. And that's what, or some people say, I never touched alcohol my entire life. That's why I live long. Or other people say, you know, I eat two eggs a day. And I've done so for the last, you know, 103 years, you know, that kind of thing. And then other people say, no, I was a complete vegan. I never touched any animal. But obviously different strokes for different folks in terms of attaining longevity.
I think there were two criteria where many people who lived, well, not into just their 90s, but into their hundreds, the commonality between them, I believe, was low insulin, low triglycerides, higher HDL.
Also, and they're doing a study on that actually at my alma mater at Columbia, at Einstein, rather, my medical school. Dr. Barzilay, I think his name is Jacques Barzilay.
From Linus Pauling?
No, that was not Linus Pauling.
No,
it's,
no.
This is from Einstein here in, on the west, on the east coast. Linus Pauling's on the west coast. And they're studying centenarians. And in particular, you know, since there's such a high, Ashkenazic, Jewish population there, where interestingly, you know, you talk to Jewish people and many of them have relatives who are in their 90s or have surpassed 100. And so these people who are old are, enrolled in a program whereby they're studying them 6 ways to Sunday. They're doing blood tests and they're interviewing them and they keep checking on them and they're doing some genetic tests now to find out what is it about them that confers a higher likelihood of longevity. And out of that may grow some interesting data on how we can extend life. But there doesn't seem to be any, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know, there's not one particular
trait. Thing, yeah.
There's actually a book on the subject called Blue Zones, which is a book about the different parts of the world where people seem to live a long time. And it talks about the environment and not just the, you know, the food environment, the work and exercise environment, but also the social environment. And it appears that certainly, you know, loneliness, solitude, isolation are risk factors for dying early. And people with a lot of social support and family support and often, you know, a spiritual or religious orientation, have a greater potential for longevity.
It's interesting because what's also on the cusp in the scientific research is the association between social isolation and inflammation.
Yes, yes, it is
very interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
So you got to have a reason to live. I mean, you know, it is. I mean, it's tough enough to live, you know, when you're middle aged, but to be motivated, to continue to strive to take care of yourself when, you know, your body resources are kind of a little bit ebbing, that requires motivation and will and support. So it's one of the reasons why people with mental disorders are very vulnerable to early death because they just don't have the right kind of mental orientation to survival that is a requisite of healthy aging.
Yeah.
So anyway, so a little digression, but that's what we do here.
A little digression, yeah. And best of luck to your mother.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for your question. All right. When we're going to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts, but give us a tease as to what we'll encounter in part two.
Okay. My wife is pre-diabetic, and the doctor just put her on metformin. Help.
Okay. We'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today, our weekly Q&A with Layla.